So this talk is obviously it's a comparison between parsimony and Paul Lewis's 2001 morphology model, likelihood model for morphology. It's something that I've been talking about and been interested in since Paul published it in 2001 when I was at University of Connecticut. And I've been talking to a lot of taxonomists and morphologists, and I feel that it was time for me to kind of lay it all out. And I admit it's a bit of an inflammatory title. sorry, but I hope you agree that this question really cannot be answered in general. Golubov, actually, when laying out the statistical approach to phylogenetics, said no method can be considered justified in general. Each individual case will require use of just that method most likely to recover the true tree in that specific case. Now, this was a criticism, mind you, but this is the approach that I take, and many statistical phylogeneticists do, and the approach that I think we should take when we're looking at our data and what the best model is or the best approach is to analyze it. These are some of the questions that are almost always asked when I bring the subject up. The first, how can you model morphology, usually is followed by, we may know something about how DNA evolves, but we certainly don't know how morphology evolves in a similar sense. And then I don't trust a model for morphology is another common comment. And I can understand that. It's an odd thing to think about. When explained, when I try to explain that we already use a model for morphology, it's this parsimony model, the statement parsimony is not a model is the typical reply. So we have to, in order to talk about this, compare apples to apples, and there's a couple different likelihood descriptions of parsimony out there. Tuffley and Steels is the one I'm going to use today, but most of this could be applied to the others. In Tuffley and Steels' description, they came up with a pure maximum likelihood model that generates the parsimony tree. This is called the No Common Mechanism Model, or NCM for short, in which, in order to get this to produce the parsimony tree, they have to estimate a separate branch length for every branch for every character. It's a lot of estimating, a lot of parameters. The fundamental difference between this approach to tree building or phylogenetic inference and the common mechanism models of likelihood is that the branch lengths are not shared. And so, as I said, the shortest Fitch parsimony tree is, under this model, the maximum likelihood tree. So when you're doing parsimony, you're, in a sense, doing maximum likelihood as well. To give you an analogy of what this model is doing, we've seen some analyses already that are mixture model analyses. Now, if we have a really large data set, as they are getting larger and larger over time, imagine here in mitochondrial genome sequences, we rarely fit it with a single model. Instead, we'll partition the data and assign different maximum likelihood models. And this increases the realism of the analysis. It comes at a cost, though, because there's a lot more parameters to be estimated because you have different models for all these different partitions. So we might take that mitochondrial genome sequence and partition it into two basic partitions, protein coding versus non-protein coding, or 14. We could get much greater realism and have 13 protein coding genes and a non-protein coding DNA, 27. We could go a little, I don't know if anyone's gone this far with 27 partitions, 27 separate models in a single analysis. But that's beginning to push sort of computational complexity to some degree. But the extreme, if we went to the very extreme of 16,500 partitions with essentially giving each nucleotide its own partition, this would be ultimate in realism because it's saying each nucleotide really can have a complete independence of the others with no common mechanism, no shared branch lengths. If we fit that, all of those partitions with a separate Jukes-Kanner 69 model, this is essentially what the no common mechanism model is doing. And it seems a little crazy from a statistical perspective. But the solution that Paul Lewis introduced was an attempt to take the problem of that sort of the statistical problem of the no common mechanism model and simply add the common mechanism simplifying assumption. so that you can analyze morphology with this assumption. And the basic of the basics of the model is the Jukes-Kanner model, modified to allow multiple or variable state number, because morphologists don't always have just four states, and all variable characters, instead of having constant characters in the data matrix as most molecular data sets have. So this is, in a sense, you know, parsimony quotes that uses branch length information, and that is the fundamental difference between these two approaches, is whether the branch length information is used or not. Otherwise, there should be very little difference. Now, we should bear in mind that all models are wrong. They're simplifying, but some are more wrong than others. So we're in this position of having to pick the model that is the least wrong. Model fitting, statistical model fitting, is essentially a trade-off between bias and variance. So you can add parameters to your model to lower the bias and increase the fit, but that comes at a cost of higher variance, well described in Posada and Buckley's 2004 paper. We know model choice or any phylogenetic inference method affects all stages of phylogenetic analysis. We can sometimes we're getting differences in topology, depending on the signal in your data. Sometimes support values differ as well. These support values can be too high or too low. Examples of sample of values that are too high come from, say, Bayesian analyses when the model is too simple. We also see support values that are too high with parsimony analysis in Felsenstein or Ferris zones. They're too low. Sometimes bootstrap values have been criticized for being too conservative, and that's sort of sucking away our confidence in the data. And I don't know if any of the morphologists in the crowd have been depressed after doing a bootstrap analysis of their data set, but that's what I'm talking about. Now, the data set I'm using is my own Necrophorine data set. This is 192 morphological characters of this subfamily of the Sylphidae. There's three genera, 68 species in Necrophorus, but it's a very popular group with about over 1,000 publications of one form or another on the species. The 192 morphological characters were coded external morphology, some genitalia, and a few larval characters. You've most certainly heard of these beetles. They are famous for their biparental care and burying of bird and mouse or rodent carcasses. Just an example of some of the characters I'm using. I think these are pretty neat. Electron microsculpture characters on the left, a more transverse versus the more isodiometric pattern in some individuals on the right. We get this very strange scale-like pattern in... oh man, I'm going way too long. I'm going to have to skip. I love this one, but have to move on. So the different support values, here we have the MKV model on the y-axis and the no common mechanism model on the x, and we get 19 clades that are well supported with both. These are those clades, long branches in red. But this is what the problem is. We get strong support from the MKV plus G model, but weak support under the no common mechanism model. So what do we do with these? Which interpretation is correct? We could use a model fitting approach, like the Akiiki information criterion, or the Bayesian information criterion. The it's a rather simple measure to use. The model is rewarded for having a strong fit to the data and penalized for its parameters, and a lower AIC score is better. Now, if you do this with your no common mechanism model in your data set, might be an exercise, a futile exercise, because the number of parameters estimated because of all those branch lengths by character combinations is enormous for the no common mechanism model, in red there. The fit is excellent, however, but that's really the trade-off. The MKV plus G model, which Paul described, solves this problem and provides a more reasonable balance between fit and parameters. Now, the branch length expectations of these two, and I have to thank Mark Holder for this idea. When we talk about, and I mentioned, the real difference is whether branch lengths are of importance. One approach, the no common mechanism approach, expects branch lengths to not be important because they're ignored. So if we were to compare one subset of our data to another, it would not be able to predict the length of the branch. We would have, say, a short branch being predicted by one subset and a long branch by another. No correlation. Whereas the common mechanism model assumes a set of shared branch lengths, so if a branch is short for one subset, it should be short for another. And you'd expect a stronger correlation. So I essentially did this. I partitioned my data set into these two equal subsets, and you can do this with your morphological data to see if it fits expectations of no common mechanism or expectations of a common mechanism model. Analyze it with Mr. Bayes. I suppose you could do this with parsimony as well. Compare the branch lengths and see whether you get a correlation. As you can see, significant correlation, a good deal of scatter, but this is comparing the first to the second half of the data set. Here we have quarters being compared to one another. And of course, there's an enormous number of ways to do this, to compare subsets of your data set, and I didn't exhaust those. But in every case, I'm getting very strong correlations, which seems to support the idea that these morphological data were generated by something closer to a common mechanism model than a no common mechanism model. So to conclude, we can use model fitting methods, although I think for parsimony it'd be pretty hard to find a data set that actually prefers parsimony using one of these methods. We can test our data to see if there's evidence for these shared branch lengths. In the Nycrofarine data set that I looked at, it doesn't match the MKV expectations perfectly, but it seems to lean in that direction. And there's clearly a lot of research left to be done on this issue. I think that's what I'm hoping to see and stimulate, and maybe some interesting discussions later. I have to thank a number of people who have influenced me on this. There's Paul Lewis right there, and funding from a variety of sources as well.